Howdy, everybody. I am J.R. Sparrow, host of West Virginia Commonplace, co-host on Sparrow's Under Review. And we are going to do a very, very, I said verily, that's not even a word, a very motivated episode with this guest here, because she has some things that will help you all in real estate. And even further than that, she has a history that will go along with this. And her name is Sally. And I chopped up her last name because you all know I'm bad with last names. I said her last name, I tried to say it was Gimmon, and that was not the case. It's just like the word,
Given.
it is Gimmon. Oh, well, what did I
Yes,
say
yes.
before? What did I say before, Sally? I said
You
something.
said Guyman when we first got on there. So
Yeah, Guyman.
everyone messes up. Don't feel bad.
Yeah. And all you got to do is switch the G with an S and it's Simon or vice versa. So the nostalgia question that we always ask on the show, Sally, is who are you? So we already know who you are. We know your name, but let us know why you're here, and then we're going to go into some deep questions, and we're going to learn a lot about you.
Excellent. I appreciate you having me, JR. I am a real estate investor who got in trouble with short-term capital gains in 2019. All of a sudden, I had to come up with $79,000 that I did not have. Because of that, I researched the Spendthrift Trust and I found out about the business and beneficial Spendthrift Trust. And now I want to teach as many U.S. investors, U.S. business owners, and U.S. 1099 income earners how they too can save taxes legally because so few people have ever heard of this.
All right, I'll definitely need to know that because some of the things I do, and especially with podcasting, it's a 1099 business and with my other endeavor. So let's do this real quick. You were an insurance agent 20 years ago,
Correct.
correct?
Correct. I still have my
So,
licenses, correct.
all right, so tell me how your journey into real estate investment was motivated. Like, how did it, how, what was the pivot? What made you change? Because, I mean, they're not even close. Like, that's two different dynamics. That's here and there.
It's kind of put it together because in 2019, I was working as a Medicare broker. And I wholesaled seven properties after work, doing things like that. Literally, this is funny. I got fired because a woman, if you know about Medicare, we were doing a special campaign in Texas, and a woman who had to get her insurance policy, because she was turning 65, moved 4 miles over the border to New Mexico, where I was licensed, and I issued a policy and I got fired for it. The next day, I wholesaled a property and made $18,000 on it. And I said, see ya. So that's a, I still have my license because I'm never going to take that test again, but I don't do insurance anymore.
Okay, that's respectable. Now, your experience at purchasing bank-owned properties during the pandemic demonstrates your ability to spot opportunities. How do you identify the investment opportunity, and what was the process like?
Quite honestly, that bank-owned property was part of my real estate group. My mentor, Jay Tannenbaum, has relationships with banks, and we would get it's called a tape, but basically it's an Excel spreadsheet. And that's where I was getting my properties. Currently, I've moved to North Carolina since 2019, and I'm doing what's called upset bids here in North Carolina, and I'm doing pre-foreclosures. Just in my zip code, there are 249 houses in pre-foreclosure that I've contacted all of them because they're
My
going to get
God.
that. Yeah, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about that is with my job, we didn't get to talk about that in the pre-call or whatever. I travel, so I was just in the Charlotte area, and then that one day that I had the weekend off, so I went to Winston-Salem, Charlotte, Greensboro area, just went floated around there.
Okay.
And previously, like, I've been all over, North Carolina. Heck, I went to Elizabeth City. So you can tell, and even Wilmington. So you can tell that I've been the whole gamut. And I went to school at Appalachian State. So, I traveled that
Oh,
area.
okay.
So I can kind of understand what you're saying when it comes to property out there, because it's a, North Carolina is a different place, a really different place.
Half of Long Island has moved to North Carolina. I mean, there's some great New York style pizza here, so but a lot of people moved to North Carolina because today it was raining, but it was 65 degrees in the middle of February and rain instead of snow.
Right. And it's just that y'all have that great weather. Now, researching ways to minimize capital gains taxes led you to business and hold on, whoa, business and beneficial Spendthrift trusts. Can you explain how I had to get that right? That was a tongue twister.
It
Can you
is, but
explain?
you got it right.
Yeah, can you explain how these trusts work and how they've helped you defer taxes legally?
I love that question. Most people have never heard of the Spendthrift Trust. 97% of trusts sold every year are what my mom and dad had and what Susie Orman talks about on PBS television, the family trust. The only thing the family trust does is avoid probate, and then it dissolves and goes away. This is exactly what the very rich families, the DuPonts, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, the Kennedys have. The Spendthrift Trust comes from England, way back when King Henry VIII started the Church of England, the famous king who chopped off his wives' heads. He started the Church of England. He went to go tax the lords and ladies of England. They went back to the Magna Carta, and it's contract law. It came to the colonies while we were still part of England. The law firm I work on behalf of inherited a trust that turned 350 years old in 2023. So it's 3.5 centuries they've been saving taxes. Our current tax code went into effect February of 1913, and the super rich families of that time, the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, the Carnegies, made sure they could save taxes. Well, they can save taxes, JR. You and I should know about this and decide if this is appropriate for you, for us too, because everyone should be on the level playing field at the same time.
Okay. Whoa, I mean, that was amazing there. So I want to ask you this, though, and this is just political-wise about this. What type of legislation threatened to raise capital gains taxes, and how do you believe the Spendthrift Trust can continue to be beneficial for investors? Because that was something when I started researching this, and this is what I get happy about when I have a guest that comes with something that is uncommon. Right. And this is something that was uncommon. So I'm learning more stuff, and my financial literacy is getting, like, you know how you have a wow moment? That's what I'm having when I'm learning about this, because I said that, you know, after this, and I'm in a boot now because I hurt my leg or whatever. So I had a lot more free time to invest in learning about this. I'm going to have a conversation with you outside of this about some more of this. But can you tell us what legislation threatened to raise capital gains taxes?
Right. The IRS tax code can only be changed by the Congress. I'm not trying to be political, but Congress is at their loggerheads right now. We might be shut down. What would happen if they do change the tax code to 643B, like Bravo? That's what the trust is based on. There's 5 elements to the trust. If they change the tax code, I can't sell the trust anymore. But once you start the trust, it's a contract. They can't break a contract. So that trust that's 350 years old, that can never be undone. I do have both the business and beneficial trust. If they change the law, they can't stop me from doing what I'm doing, because it is a contract, and it's a contract it's like a contract, a breach of contract they can't deal with. If you do some research, there is some controversy about 643B. Not the trust I sell. I sell the Benson Financial Trust. It's never been audited. It's 75 years old. Some of the trusts do LLCs in different states, like Delaware versus Nevada versus Alaska. The Benson Financial Trust cannot hold any LLC or S Corp or C Corp. So that controversy that you might find, it doesn't pertain to the trust I sell.
Okay. Now, getting back into the real estate investment, what would be advice you would give to someone considering doing real estate investment, especially in light of changing tax laws and economical conditions?
Honestly, the top millionaires in the United States, they all have some form of real estate in their portfolio. It's a very fast and easy way to make real estate. If you go to a real estate agent who knows what to do, they can give you a list of foreclosure houses. They've all received that letter saying they got 90 days, and a list of pre-foreclosure houses, which they're behind on their payments, but you know they haven't gotten that final letter yet. And just start door knocking. Just, you know, go up and knock on the door and leave a notice saying, I can help you with your situation. You know, if you wholesale a house, that's where short-term capital gains come in. You can make between, my lowest was $5,000. My highest was $36,000. I mean, that's just door knocking is such an easy thing to do.
Whoa. That's wild. You've actively involved in sharing your knowledge and insights with others through Real Estate Group and Win Women TV. What inspired you to start these platforms, and what do you hope to achieve with them beyond what you've already achieved?
I like that question. I teach in my real estate group. You know, I figured if I got in trouble with capital gains, other people might get in trouble with capital gains. So the beneficial trust is going to save you capital gains, interest income, dividend income, rental income, and royalties, the five different taxes. And Win-Win Women TV, unfortunately, a lot of women don't get the, they don't have opportunities. And Win-Win Women TV is trying to help people all over the world. So I do have another website, www.learnwithsallymarie.com, to help people pay off debt very quickly. And, you know, that's what I get to teach. I just want to share my knowledge. I mean, people help me, I want to help other people.
Okay. Now, in what ways do you think that the real estate industry will evolve in the coming years, and how do you plan to adapt to those changes?
Great question, because it really did change just recently. With interest rates going higher, instead of doing like a wholesaling deal or fix and flip, I now have switched over to doing what's called seller financing. The last house I got, one of the reasons I moved to North Carolina is upset bids. I won an upset bid for $259,000. The house is worth $365,000. I got a family in there that they're going to buy the house in 2 years at $340,000. So they've got some wiggle room there. They put a down payment, and then they're paying me every single month. This is considered seller financing, which is interest income. So I'm going to save over $56,700 in 2 years in taxes on seller financing of this house. And, you know, the family, they were in a small apartment. They had one child and the wife was pregnant. They're now in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. And, hopefully in the next 2 years, they're going to keep working on things. Maybe interest rates will come down. But the down payment they made, and then their monthly payments and their rent, all come off of how much they're going to refinance the house for. So hopefully they'll be able to get financing on the house in 2 years. It's a win-win-win for everybody, if that makes sense.
Okay, and I like that. That does make a lot of sense. We need you to come to West Virginia for a week and do a seminar.
Now, I've been to West Virginia. I spent 2 summers in War, West Virginia when I was a kid.
Oh, Lord.
It's a very small coal mining town.
Yes, ma'am. I know exactly where it is. Now, memorable success for you as a real estate investor, you've already given us that. But I need to know, me personally, I want to know a memorable challenge that you've learned as a real estate investor, and what lessons can you take from that now?
I'm not trying to crow, but upset bids. Everything was put on hold because of COVID. They lifted the Public Health Emergency Act was lifted May 15th of 2023. I happened to go in Mecklenburg County is where Charlotte is. Yes. I'm in Union County. I went into the Union County Courthouse, and it was they do 10 business days on these upset bids. And it had done 4 days in March of 2020, and now there were only 6 days left. You can't take your cell phone into the courthouse. So I came out and I called one of my clients that I knew who is just got paid, saved a whole bunch of money in dividends. I called him and I said, there are 5 custom homes I need. Can you lend me $175,000? And then we'll split the difference. We won the bid the weekend after Memorial Day of 2023. We had one realtor open up all 5 houses at the same time. We paid off the mortgage. It was $3.5 million. And each of us made, my friend Don and myself, each made $600,000 a piece on just that one deal. It was an amazing deal. I mean, he had the money. I didn't have $173,000. He had that and I didn't have it. So to me, that was my biggest win so far.
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah, I thank God, Don. When I called Don and explained it to him, he's just like, what am I guaranteed? I'm like, you'll get your money back no matter what happens. So
that was an amazing thing there. So how do you balance the risks and rewards of real estate investing, especially in the uncertain times? Like, how do you like decide on, is this the right time to do this or is this not? Because like you said, in the different areas, because you could have went further into Mecklenburg, like you could have went to Mooresville or somewhere like that, or Denver or somewhere, you know, close by in North Carolina, I mean, down there near Charlotte, and bought something and ended up in a bad spot. Because I see a lot of development out there, because I was literally just in Mooresville 2 weeks ago. So
they're building everywhere here. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
The problem with upset bids here in North Carolina is you can't get into the, the house I was telling you about the seller financing, I couldn't get into the house and see if the people who lost the house, it was a foreclosure, did they pour concrete down the sewer, you know, the sinks and things like that? Did they rip out all the lighting and stuff? It's a gamble. When I won the house and I changed the locks and I got in there, they left it almost perfectly. I mean, it had to be swept up and the cobwebs had to be taken out. But other than that, I didn't have to paint anything. It was just amazingly left well. So there is a risk there. I did one of my deals that got me in trouble with the IRS, the seven deals in 2019. It was a house. Do you know where Thomasville, North Carolina is?
Yes, I do. The furniture.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was this completely, I mean, if you saw the pictures of it, it was a shack. But, you know, I called two different real estate agents. The first real estate agent wouldn't help me. The second real estate agent gave me three contractors. First contractor was busy. Second contractor asked for 24 hours. He's just like, I'll buy the house from you for $25,000. I got the deal for $7,000. And the house was worth almost $100,000, but it was a shack. I mean, when you saw the pictures, you know, he fixed it up. It looks beautiful now, but you know, there's risk, but there's great reward too.
Right, because certain gambles work out. Okay, exactly. And I like that. I like that.
It's better than going to Las Vegas. That's what I'll tell you.
Okay, now looking ahead, what are your future goals and aspirations in the world of real estate investing and financial planning? Like, what's the next big thing for you?
My big thing, I was helping a niece. I've got 9 nieces and nephews. Whoa. I was helping one of my nieces pay her student loans. She went to a private school. She works for the county government in California. At Christmas, she told her other 3 sisters that I was helping her pay the student loans. So now I have to help all my nieces and nephews pay their student loans. So I don't know if you said you went to Appalachian ASU. Have you paid off of your student loans?
Yes, ma'am.
Yet?
Yes, ma'am.
Congratulations. I mean, you know, Samantha's 28 years old. Kayla's 20. They're steps. So 28, 26, 24, and 22. And so, you know, they all have debt that I'm helping them pay off. You know, I'm financially free, but I'm trying to help them too.
Right. Because that's one thing that burdens our younger youth, because I'm 38, so obviously, you know, I had enough time, but it things didn't get good until I was 33, so we know how that goes. So moving forward along with this, if you could, we'll do this little thing real quick. I pay homage to a show called 2020. It was a news magazine when I was coming up. John Stossel, he was the comedic relief. Diane Sawyer was pretty poignant when it came to the way that she interviewed. But there was a lady, the late, great Barbara Walters. She was regal. And another thing about her is that she could make people real personable. And she could, like, just raise a certain level of... She is the it factor, basically. We both know that. So... Sally, it's time to put you on the hot seat for your 2020 questions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, so here we go. Now, real estate investing is a hard pill to swallow. It's a lot of mental anguish, and sometimes it's heartache. But in your case, some of the heartache, you know, it goes away because it becomes to fruition later. So how do you handle the mental stress of what you do?
Before I plunk money down, I really do look at the numbers, and then I have at least 2 exit strategies, so I know how I'm going to get out of a deal if it goes sour.
Okay. Oh, so you're good. Now, with all the success and with all the money that has brought you, you seem like you're a very humble person, so it probably didn't move you in certain different directions. But when you got a hold of this extra money, this money that you didn't have before, what was the first thing you bought yourself?
First thing I did was pay off my debt. I paid off the part of my story was in October of 2018. I got my favorite car, a Hyundai Veloster, a little sports car.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, I love that car. Driving to work, 7 o'clock in the morning. I was the second car through in a green light. Somebody ran the red light without insurance. And all of a sudden I had two car payments and I went from being comfortable to eating ramen noodles twice a week. So when I paid off all my debt, I celebrated. Don't laugh at me. I went and got a Marie Callender coconut pie. And that was my celebration.
Ain't nothing wrong with that at all. And that Volster, a lot of people out here have them.
It was a fantastic car. I only had it for 3 weeks and I didn't have gap insurance. And I was living in Phoenix. I don't know if you've ever been to Phoenix.
But I've been to Phoenix.
There is a light rail, but there's very little public transportation. So you need a car. I mean,
yes.
I couldn't get from home to work without a car.
Right. So yeah, I could see that. And plus that car being economical too, and low, kind of, it was low profile. A buddy of mine has one in Ohio. I love that car. I'm a Hyundai Elantra, the old school hatchback one. I know that we're getting off topic, but man, so right there, you got your Marie Callender pie. Ain't nothing wrong with that at all.
Coconut.
All
right, so it's got to be the coconut one.
Coconut pie. Okay, coconut. Okay. No whipped cream on top?
Of course whipped cream. Of course.
Okay. Now, one thing in life that we all have to decide on is this terminology for the word success. For me, success is just doing something different that I didn't do yesterday, or just gaining, you know, and it doesn't have to be monetary. It could be spiritual or mentally, however you want to figure it out. So please define for us, Sally, what is success to you? And then after you define it, tell us about how you handle the self-criticism that you give yourself to get to success.
Interesting question. To me, success is doing 1% more every single day. So in 30 days, I've got done 30% more. So today, my goal was I had to send out emails to at least 6 different podcasters. You know, it's like a Pringle. You can't eat just one Pringle. You've got to eat the entire can of Pringles. So just 1% more. And what I do before I go to bed, I write down the 6 things I have to do tomorrow in a journal. And as I do the thing, I cross it off. So I know I've done the things I plan to do.
Okay.
So for me to define success, just being, I think we are our worst enemies. How we talk to ourselves is we you would never talk to your best friend that way, JR. So, you know, my mom always did this. I don't know if you know, I was dyslexic as a kid and school was really hard for me. So whenever I'd say something negative, my mom would tell me I have to say 3 good things. So every time I hear myself say something negative, I have to say 3 good things about it. So it can't be I don't walk to school. I don't walk to school with her. I don't eat lunch with her, and she doesn't live next door. I had to find other things like that. And you know, gratitude. I write 10 different gratitudes every single day for a whole week. I can't write a duplicate gratitude for the whole week.
Okay, and I like that. And that right there wraps up those 2020 questions. And right there, that made you personable. And I want to thank you because now people have more to go on. Now, one thing that she did earlier, you did a little plug, but we on this show, we like to do the shameless plug. Can you give us a shameless plug where everybody can meet and greet you across the internet?
I love it. My last name is rather unusual. So on Facebook, I'm not on LinkedIn, but on Facebook, on Instagram, on YouTube, you can find me, Sally Gimmon. My website is thetrustisyou.com, and I want to help as many U.S. business owners, U.S. 1099 income earners, and U.S. investors save federal taxes legally. Thank you for having me on your show, JR. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. And once again, we'll just wrap it up there because this was poised. This was just polished to death. You've been doing a very good job. So I want to tell you, thank you, Sally, for coming on. And in the near future, I will get some more information from her outside of this to put heavier in the show notes beyond what is provided by the great Podmatch. And I will get people in tune with this because I know a lot of people that work with me actually in my normal job that are 1099 workers that could use this because, you know, we have to worry about every little penny and how we're going to equate for stuff. So I thank you very much for that. So on this note, she's Sally and I'm JR, and we're signing off.
Thank you.
That was awesome.